WSHU delivers trusted news reporting that keeps you accurately informed and uplifting music that delights and surprises you. It's what we're here to do and what you count on. I'm Shelley Hassman-Kadish. Your financial support gives our reporters the resources to separate fact from falsehood. It also brings a daily source of inspiration through classical music. Thank you for listening and supporting WSHU. We're expanding our world together.
You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from around Long Island Sound. Connecticut's legislative session ends at midnight. Connecticut lawmakers also passed their two-year budget. Officials want Long Island residents to prepare for hurricane season, plus a conversation with a Connecticut singer on her new musical. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Isabella Fabo, filling in for Sabrina Garone. Connecticut lawmakers end their regular legislative session at midnight tonight. Legislative leaders acknowledge they'll probably be back for a special session in the fall. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Connecticut lawmakers end their legislative session, having passed a $55 billion two-year budget with several billion dollars of surplus money in reserve. But Speaker Matt Ritter says a special session in the fall might be needed to fix anticipated holes in the budget created by cuts to Medicaid and other federal funding contained in President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill that's being considered by Congress this summer.
I'm not panicking. I'm not shouting. I read the newspaper. Based upon what I read, it seems inevitable that we'll have to make some changes. And I think red states will be in special sessions, too.
House Republican Minority Leader Vincent Candelara agrees a special session would be needed in Connecticut, but it would be to fix problems in the budget the Democrats passed without Republican input.
It spends too much, it promises to too many people, and it's going to get us back into this building more quickly to deal with the fiscal crisis that I think we've put ourselves in.
Lawmakers say they'll probably have to draw down the state's budget reserves to make up for the federal cuts. Ebong Udama, WSH News.
Connecticut lawmakers have passed their $55 billion two-year state budget. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports Democrats are happy with the plan, Republicans not so much.
The budget includes seed funding for universal pre-K, an increased earned income tax credit for the working lower class, and more money for special education. Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff says it's something to be proud of.
We have a budget with no new taxes. We have a budget that saves. We have a budget that invests. And we have a budget that pays down debts that have been accumulated for seven decades.
Republican leaders aren't as pleased. Senate Minority Leader Stephen Harding says it uses gimmicks to get around the state's fiscal guardrails. Those are the 2017 laws that control state spending.
This is not a fiscally responsible budget. It's a budget, in my opinion, that does not make the investments necessary to move on a path forward. It doesn't find efficiencies in cutting our bureaucracy in Hartford that continues to grow beyond the means of what people can afford here in this state.
Governor Ned Lamont is happy with the deal and says he'll sign it once it hits his desk. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
A Connecticut state representative drew criticism from other lawmakers this week. She read sexually explicit content on the House floor from books she says are in the state's elementary school libraries. WSHU's Sophie Haxey reports.
State Representative Ann Dalfine of Killingly says a line in the state's budget takes decisions on what's appropriate for students out of the hands of parents.
I stand here to share with the chamber the books that are available in our public school libraries to the very children. You're telling me that this language isn't appropriate in this chamber. This is in elementary school libraries approved by the very individuals that are supposed to be the experts.
She read from several books she says can be found in school libraries, including Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. The House's deputy speaker told her to stop using offensive language on the floor. Dauphiné continued to read excerpts, but replaced or shortened inappropriate words.
And it says, give me a blow mob. Is that better?
She argued if certain words are too inappropriate to be said on the House floor, then they have no place in children's books. Sophie Haxey, WSHU News.
Singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins is bringing her new musical to Westport. That conversation is ahead.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose.
We could spend all day saying thank you to everyone who supports WSHU with financial contributions. I'm Sabrina Garone, and one way I say thank you is by bringing you the news of the day through the podcast, After All Things, to help you stay connected and informed. Your financial support is the lifeblood of the WSHU newsroom and reporting from NPR and the BBC. Thank you for making this trusted resource available to our community. We're expanding our world together. A section of Route 113 in Stratford is still closed after a sinkhole was found Monday afternoon. Local police discovered the sinkhole during a paving project near the Stuart McKinney National Wildlife Refuge. The State Department of Transportation quickly shut down the road. They say it's too early to say what caused the sinkhole or how long repairs will take. Firefighters worked to put out a fire early Wednesday morning at a recycling center in Calverton in Suffolk County. The fire started at Crown Recycling on Youngs Avenue around 5 a.m., and police shut down part of the road from Osborne Avenue to Old Orchard Road. Officials warned people nearby to keep their windows closed. A group of Long Island Railroad unions say their contract talks with management have reached a dead end. The workers rejected a 9.5% raise over 3 years, saying it's not enough, especially with rising living costs. They warn that if no agreement is reached, a strike like the one that recently shut down New Jersey Transit could happen. Hurricane season is officially underway. Long Island officials are urging residents to prepare now for future storms. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio reports.
Pack an emergency go bag, stock up on water, and sign up for real-time weather updates, all common storm preparations on Long Island where flooding can be severe. Jose Dominguez with the Long Island chapter of the American Red Cross talked about how to prepare at Smith Point County Park this week.
Public preparedness is critical, as we all know. Evacuation planning, know where to go, how to get there, and where to stay. Stay-at-home preparedness, have enough supplies to last if power, water, gas, your phone, or internet are disrupted.
And don't forget about pets. Dominguez says to stock up on pet food and medications for all family members. Hurricane season runs through November 30th. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Sophie B. Hawkins is best known for her string of hits in the 1990s, including Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover and As I Lay Me Down. She's put out 6 albums and was nominated for a Grammy for Best New Artist in 1990. She's also a Connecticut resident, and she's bringing her new musical, Birds of New York, to the Westport Library. WSHU's Davis Donovan spoke with her about what it's like branching out into theater after a 40-year-plus career as a singer-songwriter.
Birds of New York is about an estranged daughter who goes back home with her young son to reconnect with her dying father. It's a family drama told with songs that demonstrate Sophie B. Hawkins' rich lyrical storytelling, like this song, Missing.
And in my dreams, I'm calling, said New York in the spring. And if you're there, pick up. I don't want to speak to your machine. I hope you will. Strong and dance not in too much pain, 'cause my heart is filling with hope and love and dragon. We've been missing.
So tell me about the story, because I don't know too much. I know the bare bones.
It's a mother, 2 daughters, and a son of one of the daughters, and I think that's it, actually. And so the drama is very intense. I don't want you to actually tell you what happens, because what happens is, I don't think has been explored in a musical before. And I really want it to be something that the audience is on this journey and they don't know what's going to happen. Because actually the characters don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what will be revealed. So these characters aren't always, they're speaking about what's going on and they're talking to each other, but a lot of what's being said is being said with the unconscious, as we all do. And especially in families, because there's that ocean of, you know, even ancestral feelings. So it's not just the four people who come together in this very tense atmosphere because the one daughter has been estranged. She's an artist. She's a songwriter. She has a son. Her relationship has just imploded where she lives, far away from the family. And she's known as having this great career and fame and everything. And she comes home to these people expecting one thing, and a completely other thing happens.
Well, I'm tantalized by what you said about that we're going to see things that we haven't seen in musicals before, which kind of maybe gives lie to my next question, which is, what are your influences, that your inspirations that you're drawing from, whether in other art or in real life?
I think that the inspirations have to be endless because, you know, I'm old enough to have taken in so much, so I can't give every artist credit. But I will say that when I saw Fun Home, on Broadway several times, I said to myself, I've got a musical and I've got to write it. I've got a story. I mean, it's way different than what I thought I was going to write. So Fun Home was a galvanizing force.
So you have a long career as a singer-songwriter, as a musician, but this is your playwriting debut, right?
Yes, it is. And it did start as a play. It was a 200-page play. And then when I went to visit Oscar Eustace at the Public Theater, he's the artistic director there, he loved it as a play, and he was talking about the language. But when I left the meeting, I said to myself, I'll never get this made unless I put songs in it, because that's what I'm known for. And actually, it was the greatest thing. And I think I've evolved into this person who has such confidence about when I have a scene or I have something a character needs to say, I really can find new layers of it, not better layers, but new layers of it in the writing of the song and being in front of people and seeing what connects. Like, I just had these shows in Maine, two shows this weekend, and I really do hear what connects. You feel it. You feel it on your back when you're playing the piano and you're singing, and you see, and you can feel the audience member behind you, like really between your shoulder blades. You know what lyrics because you just sense it. That's the kind of, I guess, confidence that I'm bringing to the songwriting of this musical.
So you're fairly recent Westport resident, right? What was your journey to making your way to Connecticut in Fairfield County?
You're not going to believe this. It was like I have an antenna up. I was in COVID. I'm a single mother with these two kids. They were doing the homeschooling thing and they both couldn't bear it. Esther refused completely. She would not be on the computer and be learning. And I could tell it was almost like a breakdown point. And I also was looking at the sky so clean and the water so clean and everything. And I was like, I don't want to be doing this either. So I said to myself, either there's a school open or we're not going to do it. We're going to do something crazy, like just be in nature and be in our lives and do art and whatever. And that was exciting to me, but I didn't quite have the guts to get off the grid. So I Googled, and then it came up. First thing was Westport.
Last year, Birds of New York appeared at the Westport Country Playhouse and at Joe's Pub in New York City. Now it's coming to the Westport Library in a special performance that includes a cast and crew with experience on Broadway.
Did this move to Connecticut and this relocation, did that affect the story at all? I mean, I know it's about returning to New York City and there's some leaving and coming back of New York.
Yes, you're right, because I wrote it in New York City. And I think that coming here has clarified what are the important themes. And it's given me the time and the space and the trees, who I call my ancestors. It's given me all this perspective. And also, there are so many writers here. You can just feel it in the air. And then the Westport Play, the Country Playhouse, where we did the barn reading a year ago. Yes, it's Westport has allowed me to open up in a way that I couldn't have done anywhere else. You can really be sort of anonymous here. I don't know another way to say it. You can do your work and you can also be anonymous and you can present it and people take you for what you are, an artist working on their work. And there's no schmagegi around it. That's what it is.
That was singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins speaking with WSHU's Davis Donovan. You can see her new musical, Birds of New York, at the Westport Library on Monday, June 9th. You can buy tickets at westportlibrary.org. For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or with the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. I'm Isabella Fabo, filling in for Sabrina Garone. As always, thanks for listening. We'll speak to you tomorrow.